So today's Sunday, it's actually been in the past called Quasimodo Sunday, because if you listen to the intro, the first words are Quasimodo. And the way that the intro quotes 1 Peter, as newborn babies, desire the milk that is without guile, right? That's that first line, as newborn babies. So much of the prayers in the liturgy, especially of the octave of Easter, focus on those who have been received into the church at Easter through baptism. But the reason that that is continually held out to us is that we are always deepening the grace given to us in our baptism. We are all still, before the Lord, young. We are infants. We are in need of being nurtured and cared for. And so it's good that on this sort of octave day of Easter, we're reminded once again, hey, formation, growth, transformation, these things are not finished. It's almost cliche now. I think I saw almost every priest that I am friends with on Facebook make some statement like this, and I know I've said the same thing. Well, hey, we do Lent for 40 days, and Easter, it's a whole season, so don't just celebrate for one day or even for 8 days, but take in the whole 50 days of Easter. And if we hear that wrong, or if we as priests say that wrong, it sounds like eat chocolate eggs for 50 days. You know, you have fasted well, so gorge yourself. Now, it's okay. Don't worry about it. The church holding out 50 days of celebration for us is not some sort of imbalance to push us towards gluttony or excess. It isn't really ultimately about those things, those celebratory signs that we associate with joy, with Easter. It's ultimately about whether or not we lay claim to the graces given to us by Easter. Whether or not we lay claim to the graces given to us by our baptism, by our confirmation, by the reception of Holy Communion, by the sacrament of reconciliation. Have we claimed those graces? It's beautiful how, even though divine mercy was not a feast that had a home in the extraordinary form, it still harmonizes so beautifully with the church and its celebration, its lectionary given to us here today. Pope Francis, in speaking to priests of Rome at some point through Holy Week, he told them at one point two things. He said, if you are a priest and you find yourself in mortal sin, go and be with Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament. He still wants you. And then go get your chimney cleaned. Go to confession. I think that first part is honestly harder for most of us than the second part. When we have fallen into sin, mortal or not, or even more extremely, when we experience our weaknesses and our faults that may have nothing to do with sin, again, big or small, do we believe that Jesus still wants us? He does. He is not done with us. He doesn't put us on probation until we go to reconciliation. He still loves us. Are we willing to receive those graces? And in being wanted by Jesus, do we realize that that wanting includes being made more? Being made holier? Being made more loving and sacrificial? Being made more ourselves, everything that is good about us being amplified by God's grace for His glory and for building up the kingdom. Do we believe that God still wants that? And even past the realm of sin, do we start to buy into the idea that maybe I'm just not all that important? I mean, God saved me, and that is fantastic. But I don't have much that I can do or am doing for Him. As a priest, I hear that a lot from folks who are grandparents or great-grandparents. Maybe their kids have moved away. Maybe they've lost their spouse. And in a particular way, to say very clearly, Jesus is not done with you, and Jesus wants you. Not to do something, that's how I hear it so often. I don't know why God has still left me here. What more is there for me to do? God didn't put us on this earth just to be little tin soldiers. He put us on this earth because he loves us and desires us to enjoy his love in return. That's more than enough for a lifetime. But also for the rest of us who may not experience it in that way or that acutely, God has more he desires to give to us. And we see Thomas sort of grappling with that. Yes, he's grappling with belief, believing that Jesus has risen from the dead. But then there is even more, because he in some ways gets credit for being the first one after the Lord's resurrection to profess my Lord and my God, to understand in totality, as much as anyone can, what the resurrection means about who Jesus is. And to his credit, the scriptures don't say anything about him actually taking Jesus up on his offer of touching the nail marks or putting his hand in his side. And I think there's something beautiful about that, because all of us, in moments of weakness, say things to God like, if you really loved me, you would make this thing happen. If you really loved me, you would take this thing away. If you really cared, if you really were powerful, X, Y, or Z would happen. And we know that oftentimes those prayers come from moments of weakness, moments that aren't truly reflective of where our relationship with God is at. And so then when Jesus does, in fact, show up, we may feel a little sheepish that we said that, or that our faith was that weak. But we see how Jesus approaches that. He meets Thomas exactly where he's at, says, okay, go ahead. But Thomas's faith comes out. It's a beautiful illustration of what our prayer ought to look like if we desire to continue to receive the graces of the sacraments, the graces of Easter. If we desire to live 50 days of Easter with true and authentic joy, to celebrate it the way that the church desires, do we meet the risen Jesus with the honesty of Thomas? Thomas bore his heart. He showed where he actually was. At that moment, that weakness of faith, that grief, whatever it was that motivated his sort of big talk, was a real reflection of his heart. And Jesus doesn't appear wagging his finger at him, but instead inviting. And in response, Thomas is made more. So as we leave the octave of Easter, but continue with the Easter season, to remember that we are still those infants, those children in need of the good spiritual milk from our Lord, and that we need not be afraid showing him where we are weak and in need, and trust that he still wants us, and he still wants to give us more. And that is definitely worth more joy than all of the chocolate eggs in every Easter basket on the face of the earth. So as we commemorate the graces of Easter, as we commemorate the gift of divine mercy, may we be, like Thomas, honest, but in our encounter with the Lord, no longer unbelieving, but believing and made more by our Lord's love.